The funny thing is, I had that game and I never played it, and I traded it in, wrapping intact.
I love being a troll because you just get to piss so many people off.
What would you rather be inside of? A giant robot or magical girl?
Now we're stuck with you.
I'm pretty sure I'm on a higher plane of existence than you.
I was just about to bring that up. Nintendo, I'm not even gonna say anything.
We shall give you a quality show today. I'll be giving you at least 78%.
Launching!
Hello, everybody, and welcome to episode 294 of the Anavision Podcast. I'm your host for this evening, Amuro, and I'm joined by Jero.
What's up?
The inimitable Steve.
I don't even know what that means. What is imitable?
You cannot be imitated.
I feel like that's a made-up word. I haven't heard that one.
I may have just made that up. And our special guest, Fosh, who is a regular of this podcast, but we haven't heard from him in a while, I don't think.
Yep, I'm living under a rock. It's kind of how you...
Are you the new XCOM?
Just drawing a lot. That's what I've been doing.
I do like seeing your artwork post on Facebook every now and again. Mm-hmm. When I do visit that that website.
Yeah, that website.
Yeah. Are you streaming, Fosh?
Yeah, I'm streaming now. Start broadcasting now.
Oh yeah, so we are on twitch.tv/foshizzle. I got to figure out how to do that myself. It's probably not that hard.
Yeah, it's nice. It's
so do you stream yourself drawing and stuff on there?
Yeah, pretty much.
Awesome.
Yep.
Definitely go check that out sometime. So for us today, we are here together over the internet to talk about some news. So first things first, something that was actually a surprise for the person starring in the movie, Black Widow, is coming to theaters in May 1st, 2020, and we finally got a trailer for that, and it looks pretty dope. So the news was that Scarlett Johansson had no idea that the movie trailer was coming out, and she found out when Captain America himself texted her and was like, "Hey, movie looks great."
Oh yeah, I mean, it looks okay. I mean, it's one of those things where it's definitely going to feel weird. Uh-huh. I think when it comes to comic books, it's actually not uncommon for there to be, like, I guess you could say, like, you know, short comics runs for that take place at different time frames. Considering, you know, that character, spoiler alert if you haven't seen Endgame, you know, the character is dead, and you know, it's just one of those things where it's like this is taking place in between Civil War and Infinity War, which is even longer ago in terms of when the movies actually came out. It's just going to feel a little weird, but I'm still pretty excited. I mean, David Harbour looks like he's going to be a blast.
Yeah, I'm down for it, mainly because it's going to take us back to a time period in the Marvel universe that's actually pretty interesting, the Marvel Cinematic Universe. And you know, we get to find out about Black Widow's past, but also I feel like it's setting up at the same time things for the future. Like, Marvel's been moving in recent years to legacy characters a lot. So, like, you know, you will have people taking up the names of previous, you know, heroes, like Captain America and et cetera. So, you know, I feel like we're probably going to see the next Black Widow in this Black Widow movie.
I
could totally see. I think her name is like Yelena.
Yeah, I think the girl she fights in that little built the house, whatever. I think she's
right. The one that she said was her sister.
Yep, I can see that because they're saying that they're trying to set up this young Avengers team with her and a bunch of other characters that are just coming up, like you said.
Maybe. I think there's a lot of question marks with that. I think, yeah. I think the problem right now, and especially like a lot of the rumors of, yeah, they're setting up a young Avengers team and all this stuff, they've got a lot of movies. They've got a lot of movies for the next 5 or 6 years planned already. Yeah. And even with rumors of something like Fantastic Four as well, and, you know, launching a new franchise like Eternals, and it's X-Men's a possibility too. Yeah, right. But I just feel like it's going to be interesting seeing how this all works out. And my biggest thing is I feel like it's going to play a bigger role on, like, you know, Disney Plus platforms and how they're going to kind of market there, because I really do feel like that's one thing where we're going to see a lot more MCU content on. They're definitely going to be trying to push it on there just to push for their movies. Even if they put like low budget you know, lower budget, you know, MCU type movies on the streaming platform. I think that could be pretty cool because, like, you don't necessarily need to go in and pay $200-300 million to make a big budget comic book movie. You can get away with doing, you know, lower budget properties,
right?
Maybe a different, you know, different Black Widow, or even what's his name, the David Harbour character, the Red
Guardian.
Red Guardian, yeah. Like maybe have him come and do a movie. Like that could be a lot of fun and lower budget and be on the MC on the Disney Streaming Plus platform.
Yeah, so I think that's what the Disney Plus is pretty good for. It's like open it's a back door for all these characters. They can just show, like you said, you don't need a movie dedicated. You can have it pop up in the TV show. But oh, look at this character. Okay. By the way, he's going to be in another movie later on. You know.
I mean, I don't even think they already know TV show. I mean, even having just like
appearance. You know,
a couple-hour, a two-hour movie on the platform to make it for Disney Plus only, I think that could be really cool, too. I mean, we don't necessarily need a full 10-episode series on all these characters.
Well, and they've talked about how you're going to have characters that have their own TV shows, like Ms. Marvel and Moon Knight, are going to show up in the movies. Oh, yeah, She-Hulk, for sure, yeah. So, you know, there's going to be a lot of cross-pollination, so this is an exciting time for the Marvel universe.
Yeah, Marvel fans, good time.
In the meantime, with DC universe, we got something going on
Sunday, I
think CW. It yep. We got something going on the DC, whatever it's called, DC universe, whatever they're calling that streaming platform again. I keep forgetting. And they got a universe on HBO now, whatever they're going to do there. And
oh, the Watchmen stuff.
Yeah, and the confusing scenario of whatever the hell Stargirl is going to be, because it's going to be on both the streaming platform and on CW. So is it a part of the CW verse
My question is, where can I watch? Like, is DC Universe going to have the Crisis crossover?
I mean, you can catch it on CW Seed.
I don't know what that is.
It is CW streaming service.
Why are there so many damn streams?
It's free. The good thing is that's free. It's all free. They get it, like, I think one day after it airs. So it might not be Seed. I think they merge it all in just the CW. But just go to CW.com. It's free. Everyone can get it. So if you want to watch the Crisis event, you can watch it streaming. Just here's one shitty thing to note.
I'm pretty excited.
The final two episodes of the Crisis event don't air until fucking January, man.
That's so stupid.
What?
They're like, well, Avengers, no, stop, you don't copy them.
Yeah, to me that's a little bit of a kind of a slap in the face.
Yeah, it is.
So moving away from superheroes for a little bit, I'm going to talk about something that I think all of us never expected to hear from again. Half-Life is getting a new game. But it's not Half-Life 2 Episode 3.
Half-Life 3 is what people
Yeah, Half-Life, but not what people kind of wanted right now.
Yeah, there you go.
Good enough.
But Jero, you probably know about this.
Yeah, so Half-Life Alyx is going to be coming out in March 2020, and this is the first Half-Life game in the series since Episode 2 of Half-Life 2 came out in 2007. So this is pretty significant that Valve is, one, kind of making some games again before they had made Dota 2 in 2013, and then they had worked on, like, the Underlords getting in the auto chess scene. But this is, like, kind of after Dota 2, the next major developed video game by Valve. And it's going to be in VR, so I'm going to have to buy a VR headset. I just got to figure out which one is right for me, because I definitely want to play it. It looked really good, that trailer, and they're saying that the story length is on par with Half-Life 2, which was a nice long story.
Pretty cool. So speaking of VR, because it's going to be on PC, I'm assuming.
Yeah.
You got to go with the Oculus. Is it the Oculus Quest, the one that's wireless?
I'm looking at it right now, because I know for sure the Go is wireless. I got to figure out if the Quest is one.
I feel like the only way to play VR right now is the wireless way, because the wire way is just a hassle.
Yeah,
and
it's pretty annoying.
Yeah. Unless you have it on the ceiling.
Yeah. Right, you need kind of a big space too, a little bit, to play those kind of things. Unless you have one, I mean, obviously you probably do.
I mean, your place, you just gotta move your table, and you're probably pretty good.
Yeah.
But yeah,
you don't want to lose your shins.
Or you smack your TV with your controllers by accident.
Yeah, it's like, damn, Combine, they ruined my TV.
Yeah, you'd be like, uh-oh, this game's so realistic.
Yeah.
So Alex, is that the name of the, Alex is the character from Half-Life?
Yeah, so Alex Vance is Gordon's sidekick throughout a good portion of Half-Life 2 and those games. And this story takes place before Gordon came back in Half-Life 2.
Mm.
So, spoilers for a 10-plus-year-old game. That's why you see that her father, Eli Vance, is alive in this game.
Mm.
So this is like Half-Life
1.5.
1.5. Yeah. So Half-Life 1.5 times 2, Half-Life 3 will be announced soon enough.
The conspiracy theories will never die. All right, so moving right along, Persona 5 Royal game has already come out in Japan, so beware of spoilers if that's what you're interested in. It is coming stateside on March 31st, 2020. So on the bright side, it's not too far out. On the negative side, it comes out the same month as Final Fantasy VII Remake.
That's what I was thinking. They're like, my wallet's going to be crying in March.
It's like, 200 plus hours in two RPG games around the same time.
Yeah. And also, on a personal level, I'm going to be going to Japan the very next month. So it comes out a few days before that.
So you're going to have to wait a while.
Yeah, I won't be playing it very long. although I'll be getting to, explore the real life places from Persona 5.
And get
totally going to do live podcast recordings too and get them out to us too. It's going to be awesome.
Yeah.
Oh yes, I'll be recording live from Japan.
Yeah, I may give you some money and be like, buy me a thing or two. Actually,
be like, I need this exclusive redhead anime character. Insert name here. I'll definitely be. I can't wait to do that and talk about my experience there. But
how long are you going for?
It's going to boil down to a week, so 5 days. Like it's a 7 day thing, but like with each
traveling,
like each trip, like there is basically a whole day, so it's really I'll be 5 days there.
I watch a lot of IRL streamers that go to Japan. They just walk around the streets at night and just talk to people, and it's really cool.
Just don't be that douchebag streamer that makes fun of Japan.
Oh yeah, don't be looking at all.
I will not go to any sacred forests. let's just leave it at that. So here's one that I'm going to have to pass over to Steve because I don't know anything about this, but Twitch streamer Chipsa joins the Philadelphia Fusion, which is a team, I'm told, in the Overwatch League.
So this created a lot of buzz. I believe it was last week he joined the team. To much everyone's shock, because for those who don't know, Chipsa is pretty much a one-trick Doomfist player. Yeah, he plays a few other meme-esque characters, but he's pretty much Doomfist one-trick. He's really good, don't get me wrong. He got to rank one in the ladder, which is an accomplishment. Don't get me again. I'm not saying he's a bad player, but the big thing is like he's never done any tournaments. They do all this big path to pro stuff with contenders, and then to kind of wrap it all up in a nice little bow, which kind of angered a lot of people off. His brother is an assistant coach on Philadelphia Fusion, so why he got offered to join?
It's the nepotism.
It created a huge controversy. There was, especially in particularly, there was this one I guess, commentator now. I don't know what he is anymore. He used to be a coach on, he coached for like one stage, for, what was it, Dallas?
I thought he coached for the whole year on the field.
He did for the whole year?
Yeah, Jane.
Okay. Jane. So yeah, he caused a big ruckus. He was making, you know, big accusations on how this was awful, worst thing ever, you know, again, especially with the whole path to pro stuff. And he made some pretty stupid comments about esports. We'll get to in a moment. But you know, overall, like, Jarrow, what's your thought? Like, is this a travesty that he's in the league now? What do you think? Was it a good move, bad move?
So what I think is interesting about Philadelphia specifically is that they had four DPS players on their team. Mm-hmm. None of them really played Doom all that well, and I think Chipsa would be the best Doom. Mm-hmm. But they have four DPS. They have a fifth that's underage and won't be able to play at the start of the season. And they also don't have a backup for their main tank, which has been the most critiqued position, because a lot of people, myself included, think Sato is not that good of a main tank. They
you
really
play
need
one character, and that's pretty much
Wrecking
Ball. No, Wrecking Ball. Are you a Wrecking Ball guy?
Among on the Hunters, But Winston would be his best hero, but everybody else, like Reinhardt and his Orisa, was tragic. But that was the thing that I thought about, like, you know, why do they need so many DPS players? And specifically to Jane's thing, through his like complaining and all that stuff, I mean, there's some pretty valid arguments, but he just kind of went over the deep end.
Yeah, I think he kind of like he again. I want to get to one thing in a minute, but he kind of buried himself, and instead of saying I've gone too far, he's like, well, let me just keep digging.
Yeah,
he trumped it. That's what he did. You know, Trump just keeps doubling down, even though he says something stupid. He'll instead of saying, well, you know, maybe that was stupid, which is the right thing to say, he just doubles down on the stupid statement.
Now we're political.
I think even Trump supporters, I've heard Trump supporters agree with that, but no.
Yeah,
The point is, like, my thing is about Chips. And when I first heard it, I was like, this is ridiculous and stupid. But then I thought about it and I was like, you know what? Who really cares? First off, Overwatch League isn't doing so hot. Second off, having like a streamer that is relatively popular join a team infuses a lot of fans to be in that team.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I'm not necessarily saying he's DeFran level, but DeFran sold the most jerseys and he played for one stage. So that's the thing. You get a popular streamer in there, and it might not make the most sense for the team in terms of game, you know, strategy, but for financial strategy, this is fantastic for Philadelphia. Mm-hmm. I mean, not only are they going to get a lot of people buying Chipsa merch, they're going to get a lot of people, you know, more people rooting for the team. You're going to get a lot of more people rooting for the team to fail. And why that might sound like, isn't that a bad thing? It's viewers. It's people coming to watch them.
Did you see the shirt that they've sold?
No,
because they have Carpe on the team, and Carpe is a fish, so they have Fish and Chipsa. They sold.
it's so good. It is, as I said, for a sheer monetary, I think this is fine. I do agree that it is somewhat of a punch in the face to the whole contenders thing. The whole strategy of contenders is that here's the next players that should be picked for pro, because they're working it. They're doing the whole thing. And yet you kind of go with a guy who doesn't do it. I completely agree for those who are frustrated for that sake. Because I feel like, in general, contenders has been somewhat of a failure, more so than anything else, because there's been a lot of great players, and then it's like, oh, you know, hey, let's move up DeFran. It's like, okay. Yeah. Don't get me wrong, DeFran was a pro at one point, but my point is still, like, you know, they did that, and they're doing Chipsa, and I'm sure that won't be the last time they pull from somebody who's not played in any contenders matches, just because in the end, just because you don't play in contenders doesn't mean you're not good enough to be in Overwatch League. That's the other thing to point out. you don't have to play in contenders to be a really great player.
Yeah.
So, you know, it is what it is. I think it's fine overall. And again, the last thing I want to get into is Jane's comment. I love how Jane, one of Jane's comments was pushing in about esports, and he was talking about how esports in general is a failure. Now, he stupidly made a comment that made it sound like he was going to invent esports.
Yeah.
But overall, I think he actually did make a pretty good point. And I think esports is going to be one of those things where I think Overwatch League ultimately is going to fail. And I think it's going to fail because it's too big. What they're trying to do with Overwatch League is stupid. In the end, I think it was maybe a good test case, but I think it proves that esports is not financially stable for massive leagues like this. I think in the end, the best way to fund teams is maybe, again, if they scaled it down, I can still see doing weekly matches, but their big whole, what they do with, you know, having $20 million and these constant games in, you know, having these home games and away games, I just don't think it's financially stable, because in the end, esports will always be a thing where it's like, what's the next game? You know, people want to go watch the next big game, and they're going to go enjoy the next big game. And eventually, right. Overwatch, you know, it was, I loved Overwatch.
Yeah.
Overwatch opened a lot of doors for me. I never watched Twitch streaming or esports at all.
Mm-hmm.
Now I've been big on Twitch streaming, although I've fallen off a little bit now, but I have watched esports as well. But I just feel like in the end, what's next? And people are going to want to go to what's next, because it's just not going to have the legacy. Like, you know, you might go something like, oh, hey, look at football. You know, what has really changed in the last 10 years? Oh, they put new rules about how you can kick off, new rules about, you know, what you can challenge. Oh, right. You know, basketball's the same. It hasn't changed in the last 50 years. They've added 3-point lines and how you can guard under the net. But there's legacy there, and people have been watching it all their lives versus video games. There's, you know, Overwatch came out, what, 4 years ago?
2016, yeah.
Yeah, it's going to come up on its 4th anniversary. So,
gamers are notoriously always looking forward to the next thing.
Yeah, and that's ultimately the problem with esports. Yeah. I think esports is great as short tournament events, but maybe a big league like this just isn't financially stable.
Well, even things like Evo, which is the fighting game esport, right? So like, people are always playing new fighting games at these things. Like, yeah there's going to be your holdouts, but eventually, even things like Melee will fall away.
it's one of those things where Evo is a tournament event. It's very different than the scale of Overwatch League.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I see what you're saying.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
And it's
something that happens once a year instead of like having a season or something like that.
I think it's actually a couple times a year it actually happens. But it's still like six, like you have like, what, 10 games a week? I mean, so many games every week that it's hard to keep up with. And then you got all sorts of balancing things and, you know, there's so many teams. I say 10 games, actually. That's way underestimating now that I think about it. It's a lot. Like, some teams will play, like, 2 or 3 times a week, and it's, like, crazy. It's just, it's not a stable system. So, anyway, that's my
rant. Yeah, I think they'll be playing just 2 games a week next season because they only play on Saturday and Sunday.
So they've already started shrinking down.
Yeah.
So question is, how much will they shrink it before it becomes even more annual?
Yeah.
Which, again, is another thing. It's like, how can all these people afford to be programmers if you're not paying them enough? Mm-hmm. So.
And we're already seeing the retirements come in. Pine from New York retired. Today, Jake from the Outlaws retired.
See, to be fair though, like, Jake's been doing a lot of streaming lately, and I feel like that's where you go. If you're popular enough, you just start streaming. Hopefully you get a big enough audience, and then you can make some money streaming.
Right.
And then maybe you'll get a professional job in one of the leagues or some esports team somewhere.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. All right. So moving on to our last bit of news, the Quintessential Quintuplets, which was a anime that came out a little while ago. There's a second season coming up. The manga that it's based off of is ending in volume 14. So we'll finally get to find out who the bride is.
if they do it.
I really feel like it's one of those kind of mangas and animes that needs to have an ending sooner than later.
Yeah, you can't really hold that premise forever.
Yeah, I'm not reading anyway, so it's fine.
Yeah, be careful where you read online, because it does seem like a winner has been revealed of the Futaro Bowl.
Gotcha.
There are spoilers all over the place.
Yeah, so just be careful if you're...
Yeah. Of course, yeah.
Don't Google it either, otherwise it'll show up in your news feed.
Don't go to websites that, you know, regularly talk about anime and manga.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, no, I'm actually collecting the manga right now myself, because I actually enjoyed the anime. The premise is pretty good, and the art in the manga is actually like way better than the quality of the anime. But it's also J-Ro's ideal harem.
Yeah.
True, it is.
It is, yeah.
So I'm up to volume 6 of the physical manga release. So that it actually kind of like, I actually like that I'm close to being halfway done with that manga. Like, because, not everything needs to run for 60 volumes or 70 volumes.
Question. You said you're 6. How does that relate to the anime? Like,
So the anime ended in volume 4 of the manga, I believe.
So we might get a third season. That's probably maybe a little rushed to wrap up the whole series, hopefully.
Maybe. I mean, like the it depends. Like the manga, the anime followed the manga very closely.
I kind of hope it does. That's what I mean. Yeah, knowing, seeing that if the one season got up through about volume 4, then that means
if they do another 4 volumes, they could do 2,
and then maybe do squeeze in a 5th volume, and then last season do 5 volumes again, kind of just wrap up the whole series. That would be ideal for me.
Season 2, then do like a movie, wrap it all up.
Yeah,
if it's popular enough. Yeah. Harems don't. I don't think very many movies.
Yeah, I think it'd be best as a TV series.
Right. Yeah.
The fact that it's getting a second season is at least promising.
One of my favorite things about that series is explaining the premise to people who have not.
Yeah.
All right. So there's this guy. He's got a tutor, a stupid girl, but there's actually 5 of her.
Yeah.
Yeah. Most people are like, "Is he gonna have kids with all of them, or one of them?" Or I'm like, "No, it's not that kind of show."
Yeah, they're not in Utah.
Right.
I still hold to my theory that all 5 girls are going to fuse at one point.
They all split off of the main.
Yeah, they were all originally one girl, and
freak accident in the science lab and whatever. Anime plot that up.
Mm. All right, so we're going to take a quick break here, and when we come back, we're going to do our anime revolver topic, where we discuss various shows that we've picked, and then later after that, I'll be talking about some gunpla that I'm going to subject my my comrades here to. So, stay tuned.
Thank you.
All right, welcome back, everybody. We're going to go ahead and move into our Anime Revolver topic. So if this is something you're hearing for the first time, basically it's just an excuse to discuss some currently running anime right now. But what we've done is we've each picked a selection of anime shows to talk about, and then we've randomly selected the order that we're going to go. So our lists are ordered in priority of how much we want to talk about it. So this time, J-Ro is going first. What was the number one anime on your list?
It will be Chihaya Furu Season 3.
Ooh, that's one that I'm actually not watching yet.
Let's see. How can I talk about this without getting into spoilers? It's going to be tough.
Just tell me if Taichi wins.
Well, I'll tell you. So they have a... The season two was 6 years ago, but starting season three, I watched all 9 episodes yesterday that are out so far. Very easy to get back into and remember all the characters instantly, and even all the people from the other schools that are competing. It was nice to sort of feel like I could very easily get back into it. As far as Taichi's performance in the show, looks pretty good at the start. He actually wins a luck of the draw by attacking the other player's side, which was pretty significant. And hearing him talk about it, he was like, you know, I've just assumed that the card's never going to be called on my side. So he's like hardened from all of these previous losses. But then in the final of this tournament, he plays against Chihaya, and it's the first time they've played in an official match. And it's a pretty good match. Chihaya wins. And then after... Yeah, as always. She even beats there's a character that's the former queen, who now is like a mother of two. She tries to get back into it, but Chihaya beats her. And so they go on this field trip, but Taichi fakes being sick so that he can compete in this tournament to qualify for going up against the Masters. And he's doing pretty good, and his mom finds out that he's kind of playing hooky and is upset that he's in there playing Karuta. And then he loses, and Chihaya goes on his field trip, and she's all like bummed out too. He loses in this tournament, and it's so painful to see. Because it's just like he wanted to get ahead of Chihaya, and he wanted to compete in the Masters, and then he loses, and you just see him walk off afterward just like thinking about all of these scenarios. Like, it's so painful to watch for Taichi, because you love that character and you want him to do so well, but it's been so great because those matches are so entertaining and so intense that it just reminds me of watching the past seasons of Chihaya Furu, and it's kept that style and all of that up very well for season three.
And it's like I've been hesitant to get back into it because I don't want to watch Taichi suffer.
Yeah.
Now, ironically, when I said does he win, I meant does he win the Chihaya Bowl?
Oh yeah. Yeah. So there's nothing really new there.
I feel like this is Taichi we're talking about, so he's gonna lose.
Yeah. Yeah, and Arta is sort of back into it a little bit more, and he through this last tournament he kind of got reinvigorated to play Karuta a little better, so he's doing fairly well in this tournament. And surprisingly, Dr. Harda, their teacher, has made it all the way to the semifinals of this qualifier. So the old guy still got some skills left. But yeah, Chihaya Furu.
Is Zero the only one watching this so far?
I watched about halfway season two and I stopped. I don't know why. I mean, I'm familiar with the series and the characters. Maybe I'll go back and look at it again. But yeah, I know Kyokai X-Meninor loves that series. That's mm-hmm. like her one of her favorites. But yeah.
It's such an anime thing where you're like, it's like Hikaru no Go.
Mm-hmm.
Who had ever heard of Go before then?
Uh-huh. True, exactly.
And then you're like, Karuta, I don't know what that is, but man, it's an intense sport.
Yeah.
The first time I seen it, I was like, wow, this is a different way to play Yu-Gi-Oh. I mean, I've never seen people play Yu-Gi-Oh that way.
Dual monsters.
Smack the card. And...
like, oh, yeah. One thing I like, speaking of like the game aspect of it, I don't remember if I felt like during the first two seasons, if I was just feeling like, oh man, it's magic that they're grabbing these cards before they can even hear the word or anything like mm-hmm. that. But they're kind of going into a little bit more explanation of individual players' strategies on how they listen for words and how they place their cards. So I kind of like that they're doing that. In that way, it doesn't feel like magic that they're doing.
Yeah.
Right, give you a crash course of how they actually played.
Yeah.
It's kind of nice.
All right, so I am next on the list. And what I wanted to talk about was Sword Art Online, ooh, Alicization, The War for Underworld. So, yeah, I was pretty confident that J-Roll wasn't going to pick this. Steve Foss, are you watching this one?
Yep.
Yeah,
yep.
I'm caught up. Yep.
Yep. Watch today's episode.
I did watch today's episode earlier, and a certain character finally showed up being hinted at.
That's good. Finally, me and brother are kind of waiting on her. Like, come on, get in there already.
Right. Well, all I want to say about it, and like what kind of struck me about it, is just like this season has been really intense.
Yeah.
But yeah, I've been really enjoying it. For people who, I guess, don't particularly like Sword Art, mainly because of Kirito and all that. Kirito is not the main character of this season. it is very much Alice.
He's vegetable Kirito now.
Yeah, he's had his brain fried a little bit.
But on that topic, he can kind of defend himself, sort of. They kind of revealed that he moves really fast. So someone tried to attack him, and they got cut like by something.
Yeah.
I was like,
It's like his brain, his body's moving on its own. Like it like there's a bit of will there, but like he can't. Like he's catatonic or whatever.
Me and brother joked like, why not just wheel him out in the middle of the battlefield and just let him go nuts?
But let people run at him.
Exactly. Just push him out in the middle of the crowd and there you go. Let him go.
Yeah. So yeah, go ahead.
I'm sorry. The thing I like about the season is I feel like last season when Kirito and Yu-Gi-Oh, yeah, when they were going through facing off all the knights, mm-hmm. It was kind of like a big, like one boss slash rush. What?
It was like a boss rush mode, like you know, it was like one guy after the next, and
yeah, and it was a little like you didn't really get to know the characters, and it was pretty very much focused on like these kind of like one hit things, and I feel like this time we've had a lot more like, oh hey, these knights actually can do more than just their ultimate one hit slash thing, and mm-hmm. we're getting more fights and we're getting to know these characters a lot better, and I really have liked that. I feel like adds a lot more interest to me, like seeing this is a cool character, and gives you a little more invested into the actually who they are, and
yeah,
would have almost made better for last season. Now that we know who they are, kind of makes you go back and think, oh hey, yeah, now I understand the characters and what their motivations were a little more, and so I like, so far I've liked it quite a bit.
I feel like this is the part of the story that the author kind of decided, Reki Kawahara was like, I need to write other characters besides just Kirito and his love interest.
Mm-hmm. He's like, oh fine, I can add new characters. One last week they had that green haired character. I was like, they're pretty cool. I like the weapons they use. At least it's creative. It's different.
Mm-hmm. His boomerang.
Alice is super OP. I'm like, wow, she can take out the army by herself if she wanted to properly. Like, damn, she's powerful.
I like the little bits of world building, like the fact that, I mean, like, obviously it's a virtual space, right? But, like, the fact that, you know, when you use a magic art or whatever, it consumes life points. But mm-hmm. obviously, like, when someone dies, like, those life points kind of, like, spill into the, you know, into the atmosphere. And they can be recollected to be used as magic. And like, all that stuff, like, has been pretty cool. It's led to some, like, atrocities for lack of a better term, but like
orcs. I feel so bad for those orcs.
Yeah, like it's one of those things where like you know it's a virtual setting, mm-hmm. but like all these you know, for lack of a better term, artificial intelligences are sentient. And, you know, the fact that, like, they're all dying, you're like, I feel bad for Data.
Right. I was going to ask that question. Like, okay, they all these NPCs, whatever, they're all, like, self-aware AI is what basically they are, right?
Self-aware. They're not self-aware. They're AIs.
I mean, they're basically like programs, like you're saying. Because I was
they're programmed. Like the way they describe it is that, like, we've digitized the human soul.
Okay.
And like they're talking about how, like, they are independent in the process of, like, the, you know, in the fact that they do think for themselves.
Right.
Like, the I think the end game of that was to basically put you know, those Fluck lights into, like, a humanoid robot or whatever and use them as, like, weapons. So mentally they're indistinguishable from a human being.
Mm-hmm. The only thing I don't really get, I will admit, the importance of Alice, and how everyone else, screw them, but Alice, she's the important Flux light. They have to make sure they get Alice. So that's the only part where I'm a little like, I'm sure they're going to come up with some bullshit reason to
They've already talked about it.
I know,
tell you this. It was in one of the episodes that was almost completely exposition, so I probably tuned out.
Yeah, I think so too.
And remember, it is Project Alice. Like, the whole thing is named after her. Like, you know, she's the one that they're trying to.
The only thing I can assume is maybe she
doesn't really make much
maybe
sense.
Maybe she's the source code for that. Maybe,
but it doesn't make much sense.
They need
because,
that key information from her.
But again, it doesn't make any sense because you know, this you know, world has been around for hundreds of years now. So why is Alice, who was born in the last, what, 16 years?
The whole point was to develop that, because it's a hundreds of years of, like, simulated time or whatever, right? Of accelerated time, I mean. So, like, the whole point was to get to that, or to develop that AI. I don't know. Anyway, like, my main thing is that, like, all that aside, like, the drama of the war and all that stuff is enough to keep me riveted. And
the two military guys that just jumped in.
Oh yeah, yeah, and the
terrorist, whatever you call him.
Yeah, Vector, or whatever his name is.
Yeah, Emperor Vecta. Yeah, but he, like, his real world self.
Yeah,
he is sick bastard. Like, holy shit.
The episode was kind of hard to watch. The one where you feel about his childhood. I'm like, that's no, it's not good.
It's like, I knew something bad was gonna happen, but
I did too. Like, I kinda, the way he's looking at that is that girl. I'm like,
I killed someone to watch them die.
Just and then, like, wow, so cool. And then, like,
He's like, I've been searching for that again. And I'm like, dude, you are fucked up.
And then you realize the people, the souls in the game. He's like, oh wow, this is interesting.
Video game. And the fact that, like, okay, so, like, in the most recent episode, like, Alice, like, she found out that they were looking for her, so she, like, went and showed herself in front of the army, and he was like, oh, she's there. I'm like, no, don't do it. One thing you shouldn't do is go anywhere near that asshole.
Doesn't she look kind of like the girl in his childhood?
His childhood was named Alicia.
Yeah, I'm like, that's a coincidence. I don't think so.
That's a coincidence. but yeah, I've been really enjoying it. That's probably the show that I think I look forward to the most right now, but
yeah
it's been really good.
I really like the action, because I feel like
especially today's action was fucking amazing.
Kind of going back to the last season, when it was, you know, Kirito and Yujiro battling all the guys, it was pretty much just Kirito and Yujiro battling all the guys. So it was the same kind of fighting, but they were fighting different people. Versus this season, we're getting multiple different styles. Like, it's not just one person facing a bunch of different people. It's, oh, here's this week we see the person with the very thin kind of fencing like sword fighting a fisty guy, and last week we had boomerang
fisty guy, a monk.
Yeah, but the point is, it's still the point, like, you know, it's giving us a lot of variety. And I
move on to our next show. So Steve, what do you have for us?
I mean, I would love to talk next, but you did skip Fosh.
Sorry. I'm not looking at the notes. My memory is crap. Yeah, Fosh is next. Fosh, what do you have for us?
Mine is, I'm not sure I'm going to talk about this one, but Kimono Michi Rise Up, the wrestling isekai.
Yes.
I've been enjoying this one. It's a little funny. I think funnier than the Cautious Hero, but that one's for different select people if they want just pure jokes. But so far, yeah, the wrestling one's been interesting. Just seeing how the cast has been growing since, you know, they finally met the dragon girl and the vampire, and now the other wrestler guy from the other world, he's also Mal. There now. Yeah, Mal. Just that whole setup was so funny. How in the real world he's known as Mal, and in their demon world they just assume, oh, he's a demon lord because his name literally means demon lord. I just think that's funny how they kind of paired him off with the rivals to the dragon girl and her servant. And how they have this little rivalry between the two characters. I think it's funny. Seeing how they interact. And it's like the purple-haired girl just thinks she knows everything. Yeah, Joanna's son, whatever. She knows everything that's going on. It's like, no, you're just guessing. her interaction's been funny.
I mean, I do have to agree with you on, in terms of this show versus Cautious Hero. Like, I'm super behind on Cautious Hero, and I don't know if I ever really want to catch up. I really do still enjoy this show from a week-to-week basis because I just think it does a better job in terms of mixing it up and having the comedy be at least appeal to me more.
Mm-hmm. And I like the little bits with the wolf girl, Sugar Ray, always finding weapons. It always cracks me up just seeing how it's like, she's like, oh, wow, free weapon, just takes it. Like,
she's like, yoink, mine.
That part's been pretty funny. And now yeah, coming up there next week, they're going to finally do a professional wrestling match between actual wrestlers this time. So I'm excited to see how the other people see it, I guess. And they get fired up and want to start doing... I know he's going to be training the vampire girl how to wrestle. She asked, like, last week, because she wants to beat the other girl badly. So it's been interesting. And I guess certain things we got to see... We really didn't get to see it, but the dragon girl did transform. But we didn't see it on screen. But like, I'm guessing she's still more powerful than the other girl.
It's just one of those things where I think, like, I really do enjoy the cast of characters. And I don't even mean just the main kind of main tier. The side characters are really funny. Even Altiana, the princess character, you know, she went from just, you know, princess butt. It's just like her appearance in the last couple episodes has been pretty good. You know, like last episode or this week's episode where she's like, I'm going to go get all the money. And she runs off and she gets back and they're like, it's completely, they've already resolved the issue. And she's like, what's going on? It's just like,
yeah, it's very funny.
It's so like, it kind of hits all the good comedy points. And even like, you know, as you're mentioning Carmilla, the vampire girl, I really love like her interactions with Genzo and how he's just always constantly just like choke holding her and body slamming her and just absolutely doing everything to her because she's such an idiot. And I just really think it's just one of those things where it's, again, the comedy just really appeals to me. And I think Genzo is a big part of it. I think he's absolutely hilarious. And just like even some of his reactions where he's always crying. And then I definitely could see how like some of the gags might get old because they're always calling him Demon Slayer, but it's just not Demon Slayer, Animal Slayer, Animal Demon, or whatever Slayer, and he's constantly beating him up. But it's still like, I think as a weekly show, to me, this is what kind of keeps it really funny too, is because again, it's like, yeah, the jokes are the same all the time, but being weekly, you kind of get a little more fun out of it. So, still solid show. It's definitely one I would recommend, especially if you watch the first episode and you really like the comedy. Like it keeps the comedy good.
Right, I think when the cast gets a little bigger, there's more people to play off of, and it's very entertaining to watch. And like you said, even side characters, like last week you had the cat girl and the wolf; those were funny characters.
Yeah.
They stole the guy's dog, and it was just this whole big thing. It was pretty funny.
Yeah, and even like some of his interactions with the one, I guess dog woman. You know, it's like. He's like, he's such a furry.
The kobold, Genzo
is a furry. 100% in the real world, he's a furry. So, yeah.
Yeah.
All right. So, moving on, Steve, now for real this time. What's your pick?
So, I'm going to go ahead and I'm going to pick
Vinland Saga. So my first one was actually going to be Sword Art too. So Armor got that one off. I was actually a little surprised that was your first one there.
Yeah, I well, granted, it's probably the show that I watched most recently. Today being a Saturday, yeah. So it was fresh on my mind. But you know, yeah, it was. I've been really enjoying it.
Yeah, well, I think kind of counter to that, Vinland Saga has been. I've been really enjoying. Absolutely, like I could not recommend this show more. I know I always constantly recommend it. The only thing I'm a little slightly concerned on is the rumors that it's going to be steering away from the manga, but that doesn't make much sense to me considering the show is about to end. So how much, you know, original ending is it going to have maybe? But you know, even with that said, like what we've had up to this point has been absolutely great. Like, yeah, I think, you know, it took like what, 3 or 4 episodes for them to actually get to the point where the show is like, oh, you know, now it's really getting started. But ever since then, like all the characters, like, you know, kind of speaking to the characters, I feel like, you know, Thorfinn and Askeladd, you know, and there's most recently Kudatad, or how do you say his name, you know, the prince, like all coming into themselves. Like, I love these guys. Like, I mean, I really do. Like, I really am so interested in this story and how Thorfinn, and I think to me the most surprising thing as well is how Askeladd has turned into such a, like, I feel like his character when he's first introduced and how he's kind of betrayed, I really felt like he was going to be like this antagonistic, you know, his whole point of his character is just wait until Thorfinn gets his revenge, you know, and instead he's become like such a massive character, an important character in the series, and ironically so kind of a father figure to Thorfinn and how he treats him and trains him, and just really absolutely like such a great show. I love the action scenes. It was a big fight with Torkil and Thorfinn, and it was
I got my favorite character, Thor. Yeah. Torkil, he's just like, kind of reminds me of Kenpachi from Bleach.
Yeah, that's good. Yeah.
He's like, you can't stop him no matter what. You cut his eye, he's like, that's cool, whatever. And he's fighting. And he cut his fingers off, now he's fine.
Yeah.
He's like, damn, this guy won't stop.
Yeah. Like, he's like a monster of a character. I love him, too. Like, I kind of love his simple attitude towards things.
Me too, yeah.
Yeah, it's just like, hey, yo, this is cool. I love fighting.
He just wants to get drunk and fight. That's all he wants to do.
Yeah. Absolutely. Like, I really think this, like, when I was actually thinking about it, like, it was one of my things I was recently, like, You know, we're getting up to the end of the year. We got to start ranking our top shows of the year. And I was thinking, like, this is definitely going to get a make on my list because it's action, story, all of it really is top notch. Really something that I really, as I said, I can't strongly recommend the show more. It just absolutely delivers on every front. Unless you want an etchy show, because this is all dudes.
A little slow at the start, but once you get the bigger cast joins and the overall starts, you know, the wars and stuff start happening, it gets really interesting. Because these kind of shows I'm not very big fan of, so it takes a while to get me into them, but this one actually did a fairly good job. I mean, I think 4 episodes in, and it starts getting really interesting.
The first 4 episodes are 100% kind of set up. Mm-hmm. You know, I guess somewhat spoilery, but, you know, the first 4 episodes are all about getting Thorfinn, you know, into a situation where his dad dies and he's kind of going on his own path.
Right.
And if you watch the intro and the ending, you knew this was coming. Mm-hmm. So it's not like, oh, can't believe it. But like, that's the whole point of the show is it's getting Thorfinn on the path of where he is now. And
him exposed to this the bigger world that, hey, this is how things really work.
Exactly. And I think once we got to that point, the show just opened up and just made me go, oh, I love it. Like, I just love seeing, you know, especially with some of the early episodes with him being so young and, you know, having to hunt down food in a forest and, you know, following these gruff guys and challenging Askeladd, even though, you know, he's going to get his ass whooped, you know, just all that stuff. And then, like, again, it gets so, like, hard, like, the episode with the village and how they kind of focused on the girl character. It was just like kind of like a one-off thing, but it was just such kind of like a heartbreaking kind of like, wow, powerful story moment. So.
Yeah. And yeah, it's, but and then like seeing the prince go from like mute, not want to very shy to being like, oh, I'm taking up, I'm leader now. Like, you know,
yeah,
that was pretty cool seeing his change, I guess.
Yeah. I really feel like his, like personally speaking, I think, admittingly, if you think about it logically, it's too dramatic of a shift. But as a story element, like, it works, and I think I enjoyed it, and I really like his character now versus his character before was kind of irritating. So, yeah. Definitely a strong show.
Oh, yeah, it's fun.
I've been meaning to watch it, but I'm very lazy.
Same. not lazy, but...
Yeah, no, you know what, Steve, again, I'm on vacation. I might actually watch it just for you.
Yeah, I'm sure you will. I'm definitely going to believe you.
Well, I'm going to watch it just to prove you wrong. All right, so since, you know, we all decided we have a little extra time tonight, we're going to go ahead and do a second round of the Anime Revolver. So, like I said at the top, we all picked a list of shows to talk about. So we're just going to go with our next selection down on the list for another round. So starting again from J-Row, what's your second pick?
It's going to be Fate Grand Order Babylonia. I was pretty sure that my picks were safe.
Now that's one that I'm not watching on a weekly basis, but I've seen a lot of clips from because it's a Sakuga fest.
Oh yeah, episode 8 with Uchiwaka and Leonidas versus Gorgon. Phenomenal animation, so good. And the size of Gorgon in those episodes, she's massive, and that's really cool to see.
There's a few bits of like CG. I'm like, but I mean,
it's kind of like CG monsters.
I mean, they gotta animate a big CG creature. I mean, more props to them for at least getting it to work. It doesn't look awful. It just looks a little like there's some shots, not a lot.
Yeah, but yeah, overall,
like that was the best animation I've seen of that series. Anyway, it's like, damn.
Yeah, and the way they do the action, I would say, like, you know, from like a sound design perspective is on par with what Ufotable does with their Fate franchises, which is really good. A couple other moments that were really good were them convincing Ishtar to join the group. And Ishtar is basically like 70% Ishtar, but she's inhabited the body of Tosaka Rin, and they actually talk a little bit about that. And they convince her by promising her treasure and throwing gems up in the air.
That was funny.
That's so good. And then this last episode, Quetzalcoatl came in and she's cool. They were convincing Jaguar Warrior to join, and that's Taiga from the Fate franchise.
Right. And
the main master activates Harem Protagonist EX and talks about how it's like, you know, she's, you know, her fur is that of a boar and her eyes are that of a gazer. It's all so beautiful. And they show an animation of a flower blooming and then another flower like leaking liquid. it's like just very just heavy on the innuendo. That show's been phenomenal. And
also, Taiga, another OP character, he's just like, wow, I don't know how they're gonna do. They had to fight her for real, then you wouldn't stand a chance.
Yeah.
The episode with her, if she actually fights them all, it's pretty good. Also a good animation on that.
All right, so moving along. We're trying to keep them brief this time. My second pick was actually Fire Force. And who else is keeping up with this one?
Me.
So have you guys kind of, no pun intended, cooled off on the show a bit?
I still think it's entertaining. I'm enjoying, you know, now that they're in the nether area, I've been enjoying the battles that have taken place there so far.
Go ahead.
I do, in terms of cooling off, I do feel like I have cooled off a slight bit. I won't necessarily say it's gone from being, oh, this is the greatest show ever, to being, eh. It's more like, this show is great. This show is great. You know, kind of like a, maybe a exclude the exclamation point.
Yeah.
I feel like it has waned a little bit in some things, but overall, animations, action's been good.
Yeah, I mean, this is a show that I was very much enjoying, but like, I don't know what it was. I just kind of like let it sit for a couple weeks, and the arc where they went to get their engineer, I basically watched that all in one sitting. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't, you know, like it wasn't bad per se, but I just kind of like wasn't super interested in it. But like Jero was saying, the Nether arc so far has been really exciting. You know, we finally got to see Maki and Tamaki like doing something.
Yeah.
And yesterday's episode where we actually got to see the lieutenant like show off why he's the lieutenant.
Yeah.
That was really awesome.
Samurai Knight was pretty cool.
Samurai Knight.
Oh god, Arthur is an idiot. And that was samurai. That was really fun. Yeah.
Right. Samurai Knight.
Yeah,
he's like, I'm a knight samurai. Wait, no, but that implies that I'm a samurai, so yeah. I got it backwards. And like, this is all while he's in the middle of battle.
Like such an Arthur thing to do then.
Yeah, so my excitement for the show has been reignited.
Yeah, and then, like the donkey. Yeah, his faithful steed. Oh,
I admit that part had me laughing my ass off.
Yeah, it did.
That was pretty good. The fact that he kept it afterwards.
He kept, he's like, you're good. Like,
yeah.
You're good.
Sorry, Princess Ibana, but Lisa is now best girl.
Yeah.
Gee, I wonder why. Yeah, I like all the girls in the show, but Princess is still my favorite.
The way they got Eris to realize which Tamaki was the real one was ridiculous.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah. It was a little, yeah, like,
dude, this guy has an old man voice. How do you not know it's me?
Oh god. Yeah. And one last thing before we move on. The way they defeated the way they defeated Tamaki's opponent, where they beat him literally.
Yeah. I feel like his brain was coming out of his skull.
Yeah.
All right, Fosh, what was your next pick?
Mine was that soft tennis show, Hoshino Sora, I think is what it was.
Start of the Line.
Yeah, but after you guys talked about it last time, my brother started watching it, and I'm really enjoying that. Mm-hmm. I'm more enjoying the drama side of things. It seemed like, man, these guys are pretty screwed up.
It's not really a sports anime. It's more of a drama anime with sports in it.
It's more of like, oh, which kid... I'm playing like a lot of bingo with like which kid has the worst life ever. Like trying to figure out which ones, but it seems like they all have like these, you know, really messed up home lives. Well, most of them anyway. Main kid, I think his household has a terrible home life, but his mom's nice compared to the other moms in the series so far. I've been kind of not sure. But
it's one of those things where I really dug the drama side of this show, and I still do like this show, but I do feel like the drama has gotten a little ridiculous.
Is they escalating things maybe too far?
No, it's not that they escalating things too far. It's as you pointed out, every single one of these kids like before it was like Mackie, and then something was going on with Toma too. You know what his family life was doing.
Now, so I was
like,
week,
okay, that's
week,
cool. But then it's like, oh, by the way, all these other kids. You know, this guy's father beats him. This guy's mom tried to kill him. You know, this guy's mom, helicopter mom, and is just telling him not to do anything. It's like, holy crap! Like,
and the kid's like borderline psycho because he locked the little sister away, the other kid's sister. I'm like, I don't like this way this is going.
Don't forget the drama of the kid that doesn't know his sexual identity as well. It's like
that too. Yeah, I mean,
so much drama in this show. It's kind of like it reminds me a lot of like This Is Us, where it's like every week something's got to happen where it's got to be so sad and severe. They can't just have like a chill week.
No.
Although admittedly, like they did the one I take that back because they did have the one episode where it was the competition, and I did kind of enjoy that. Again, I do feel like there is some sports in this. I feel like this is kind of like a good gateway drug to be like, hey, do you kind of like the sports in this show? Maybe you'll like sports anime. Because, again, there was at least a couple episodes. But, like, even, I don't, you know, this week's episode where it was like I thought they were going to do a lot more of the competition between their team and the girls' team, and it was just like, nope, nothing. And then they like, we're done with it. Like, okay.
Yeah, most of them focused on now being a psycho.
Exactly.
Yeah, because his mama. But yeah, I'm enjoying that. I mean, it's, yeah, like you said, it's a pretty good gateway to get into the actual sports. I mean, like you said, it's not that too much sports, more drama, but yes.
It's, it's a good show. I do like it. I do like the characters a lot, so.
All right, Steve, your pick?
So that was actually my next pick. So,
we've talked about everything on your list so far.
No, actually, I got two more. So I'm going to go with actually my next one, which was actually going to be My Hero, just in case no one talked about it. I feel like
for today's episode.
What?
So no spoilers for today's episode.
Well, I think to me, I don't want to get into too many spoilers. Actually, I want to get into more of a disappointment that this season has kind of been.
Okay.
Oh yeah. I mean,
I'm not really feeling this season at all. I feel like the arc, this whole arc with the guy with the mask. I can't remember his name.
Overhaul.
Yeah, he's just not interesting. The splitment of the characters and how they're doing this whole, you know, because like today's episode was a fight with Sun Eater, so we kind of got to learn more about his character. Last episode was just all kind of like a prep thing. I just feel like there's been a lot of prep, and to me, I feel like the show kind of suffers from that attitude, that the season suffers from being too much prep. Like, I know, like, let's be real here. Shonen anime has a lot of training arcs, but I feel like training arcs are an end means to a goal. Like, it's them becoming stronger. This has been more of a let's just prep to get to the point where we're raiding, and I just feel like it was boring. And I feel like Night Eye has not been a terribly interesting character. I did love his twist with the whole I've seen All Might's gruesome death kind of scenario. But I think in general, I haven't really found all that interesting. I think to me, the most interesting thing is just kind of seeing the interactions between the class and how Eraserhead's kind of there. And I actually find that somewhat of an interesting kind of like a role model situation. I've actually kind of enjoyed that element of him, especially with Izuku. Deku kind of
I've been kind of enjoying the fact they've been kind of taking a focus off Deku as much and focusing on like Red Riot and other characters, which is pretty nice. They actually focus on other people for once.
Like, I like the fact that they did that, but at the same time, I just haven't felt super compelled by the art.
Right.
And I think that's where I kind of stand. I think in general, this season's been a little bit of a letdown. And I think it's just maybe these characters aren't as interesting as the League of Evil or whatever they're called.
Yeah, right.
I mean, like, you guys, have you caught up in it at all? Like, have you thought the season's been good, or have you been a little let down too?
I've been caught up, but I kind of agree. It's been, to me, it's just been really slow getting to the the point. I mean, overall, like you said, not a very interesting villain as far as like the past villains you've had. And his motivations, like, I guess he just wants to rule the world, I think. I don't know. It's just hard to figure out what he's up to. And I've been told, this arc is supposed to be the best because the Eru girl is, I guess, is very important. So I was like,
maybe it gets into something better once they get into that situation.
My thing is, his motivation is he wants to rule the criminal underworld. That he wants to be the next All for One. I mean, that's kind of simple. It's not a super complex motivation. Like, he's not an anarchist in the sense that he wants to like destroy everything, but he's like, there was a previous head of villains, and now I'm gonna fill that vacuum.
Even more than that, like even the emotion between the emotion part about with Deku and then learning about All Might and then realizing Togata was instead he went with me. Like, I didn't really feel a lot of drama there. Like, I felt like they wanted to really push something hard, but I didn't really feel like, oh man, great, he was gonna pick him over Deku, and then he met Deku and totally picked him. Like, wow. Like, to me, I didn't really feel much of a, like a, oh wow, that was like a serious situation. Like, they tried to really lay it on thin, like, oh, there's real pressure there. I can't believe, you know, I didn't know about this. But to me, I think the more interesting part, again, was the whole, like, the idea that Night Eye saw, you know, his death. But they didn't ended up focusing so much heavier on also that whole, you know, oh, Mirio was going to be picked over me. And I was like, that's not the interesting part of this. I want to know more about whatever death is going on here. Like, that to me, like, that sets up something much more dramatic and interesting.
Yeah, because the issue with that would be that we didn't really know much of anything about Mirio until late last season. And now to introduce all of this stuff now just kind of seems to create like some little bit of conflict between Deku and Night Eye early on.
I feel like even saying we didn't know much about him until late last season is being generous. We didn't know much about him until the last two episodes of last season.
Yeah.
That's when he showed up and it was like, oh, here's this guy.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the thing there for me is that, like, for Deku, he's such a perfectionist, and he's really self-critical, and, you know, he sees what Mirio can do with his ability right now, and he doesn't, like, he's not living up to Mirio's ability right now, even when he has All for One, and, you know, to think that what he could do with All for One, right? So, like, that's where the point of comparison comes. I do agree with Steve, like, the season's been slow to get started. It's had some few, like, exciting moments. I thought the Red Riot episode was really good. You know, where he got to kind of like evolve his quirk and power up and all that, and the confrontation with Chisaki Overhaul, where, you know, Deku was forced to basically let Eri go, and the kind of like the guilt that he felt, like, after, like, you know, where he was like, I could have done something, but I let her go. Like, I really like that. But, you know, again, like, it's been kind of like, come on, let's get to it.
Yeah, I think it feels slow this season, because in the past, Deku and all those other characters would just be like, I don't give a shit, I'm going in and seeing what's going on and get themselves caught up in all this. Now they're actually a part of an organization that's planning it, and you have these old people that are kind of like, come on, hurry up, I want to rescue the little girl, you know?
We're dealing with the bureaucracy of Hero Society.
Right.
Right, and the character that the guy fell dead in the locket in midair, he's just ragging the whole time on all the young characters.
Oh, and the fact that... like,
Jesus, shut up.
the fact that we found out that Night Eye is a Pretty Cure fan.
Yeah, that's true, he is. Yeah. He knows.
All right, so we'll go ahead and wrap up Anime Revolver here, and we'll go ahead and move on to our closing section. So this is going to be kind of a little bit of a show and tell for the guys here. It's really just kind of an excuse for me to talk about Gundam model kits, or Gunpla, and what I've been working on recently, and maybe a few things I'm looking forward to. So if you want to see the pictures in question, you can go to anavision.org, or... you know, if you were part of our Discord server, you'd actually be able to see them, because that is where I'm going to post them right now.
Share them on, Facebook this, as on well. The stream.
And Facebook as well.
I'll share them on the stream while you talk about them.
Oh, yeah, we're streaming.
Putting them on the program I've been using.
So the first kit I wanted to talk about is one that I've actually built a little while ago now. But something that I'm, like, really proud of and super impressed by was the real grade 1/144th scale new Gundam. So, Jero, you're going to be familiar with this one, because we just saw the movie the other night in the movie theater, which I was very, very excited about, because I've seen that movie many times.
Mm-hmm.
But never in
the
theater.
Nice to see it the first time for me.
This was a kit that came out this year. It's a real grade kit, so it's like a smaller scale model kit, but the real grades are way more complex and have, you know, lots of detail and, you know, moving parts and stuff. So this one, what I did was I actually have been kind of like dabbling with paint applications recently on my model kit. So something that's I've always kind of held back from doing because I was kind of worried that it wouldn't look good. but like what I did was I actually used some gold spray paint to paint all the yellow parts on the model kit. So that would be like the V fins, some highlights on the armor and the fin funnels. So I did those all in gold. And if you see the picture here, I applied all the decals and stuff on there. What really got me about it was that just a little bit of extra effort with the gold paint, made such a huge difference with, in my opinion, how good it looks. Mm-hmm. And it's one of those things where, I was always afraid to try it. And, sometimes you just got to kind of go in and do it, right, and just see how it works for yourself. So anybody that's kind of gotten into the hobby and, is worried about that, start with something that you don't care too much about, or, something cheap that you can experiment on. That's the main thing, is just trying it out, seeing how it works and, kind of finding out for yourself. Mm-hmm. So the next kit I want to talk about is another one that's actually more recent, came out in the last couple of months, I think. This is the High Grade Penelope. So High Grade, I think, Steve, you've, and Jero, you've both built High Grades before.
Yeah.
So you're familiar with kind of like the size and quality of those kind of kits. Yeah. So the Penelope is a mobile suit that is extremely large. So even though it's 1/144th scale, when you put it side by side with other model kits that are of the same scale, it just utterly dwarfs them. So first, I want to show you guys the box that it comes in. I've put the 1/144th scale Gundam next to it for size comparison. It was a quite large box. So there you see on the picture is the Penelope. What's kind of unique about it is that it's essentially it's like a standard type Gundam that's large, but that's wearing a lot of crazy armor. Mm-hmm. Makes it kind of look like a dragon. Wow. So next post is just what the Gundam looks like by itself. That would be the Odysseus Gundam. Right. So again, it's kind of a standard. It's got a little bit of an evil look to it. I want to show you one more to what it looks like standing next to a lineup of other mobile suits in the same scale. So this is the lead Gundams from every series in the Universal Century, from the original going up through F91. Yeah. So Odysseus, you notice a trend of things getting bigger and bigger until the F91, when it suddenly gets very small.
Mm-hmm. That's a thick Gundam.
It is very, very thick, and it's about to get thicker here, because we're going to show you what it looks like with all of its fancy armor, the fixed flight unit. And again, there it is next to the RX-78-2. Wow. For scale. It is quite large and unwieldy. So that one, I was just excited to show off. What kind of surprised me about it is, it is a high grade, so it doesn't have crazy detail, but because a lot of it is just very large pieces of plastic, it's got a lot of panel lines in it that kind of give it detail. So panel lining is when you fill in lines on the kit to kind of make them pop. On a kit that's mostly white plastic, it's kind of a necessity to make it, to fill those in to kind of give it more detail. So you're not just looking at a big white chunk of plastic.
Like the large shadow of an anime girl behind.
Right.
That's a good gun. So yeah,
it's definitely those accent lines. the last one that I've got more, I could go on for days, but the last one that I want to show you guys is something from the most recent Build Divers series that's airing right now. Fosh, are you watching this one?
Yep, I'm watching that one. Yep, it's pretty good.
What do you think of it so far?
It's interesting. They're playing around with a similar Sword Art Online idea of AI.
It's definitely a virtual reality type of thing. What I like about this one, what I like about the Build series of shows is that it kind of gives them room to kind of play around with, Yeah, customizing and but like, you know, the premise of these things being war machines is kind of is like out the window. So like they are in the show model kits and toys and stuff that have been customized by characters. So the figures very much kind of bring that like toy aspect to life. And the lead Gundam for the series is called the Core Gundam. And like what's unique about it is that the Core Gundam is very small. It's basically a Munchkin Gundam, and what makes it unique is that it has a bunch of like different armors that it can equip to make like different forms. So I picked up the Core Gundam in the Earth 3 armor set, which I'll be posting now.
That sort of reminds me of the Age Gundam, where you can give it little power ups in here and stuff, upgrades.
So there's the Core Gundam riding on top of the Earth armor, like it does in the show. You can see the proportions are very out of whack. They're very short.
Chibi.
Yeah, right. It's like a chibi. Like it's weird because it has like normal Gundam like torso and head proportions, but then its limbs are very short. But that is because it actually combines with the armor that it's riding on there. And here we have the Earth 3 Gundam with all the armor equipped. So like it's kind of like a standard, you know, red, white, and blue Gundam, but like what I like about it is just how poseable it is. Like it's not hindered at all by the fact that it's a combining mobile suit. All the articulation from its small form is retained. And like it's just one of those things where like, yes, it is definitely a ploy to get you to buy more model kits, but like I love the customization aspects of it. Like it has like different weapon sets that you can get. It's like a plastic DLC. to customize it. So here it is with the V2 weapon set, so like an over the shoulder cannon. The V2 I have not gotten yet, but I definitely plan on getting at some point.
Nice.
But yeah, I mean, like, you know, like, that's the thing is that, you know, Gunpla is a very vast and wide hobby. And, you know, of course, like, if you are interested in these things, like, if you like robots at all, like, I think it's always kind of fun to give it a shot. Like, I know, Fosh, have you ever built a model kit?
Yeah, I've built one or two back in the day. I have two of them. Like, Heavy Arms and Wing Zero, the ones I have.
Yeah, like, the quality of the kits is always kind of going up. Like even a difference of a few years like makes a huge difference. So just to kind of finish off here, there's a few upcoming kits that I've actually already pre-ordered. This one is the very funky looking RX-78-2 40th anniversary edition. So what's kind of interesting about this one is that it's an industrial design version of the RX-78-2. So like they actually brought in an industrial designer that went to the same school as Sid Mead, who designed the Turn A Gundam, famous for working on Blade Runner and other sci-fi movies. So they kind of like reinvented it to kind of look like what it might look in in real life a little bit, but they wanted to also kind of replicate the articulation that shows off in the original show. So like, you know, the most exciting thing about that is that it, even though it's high grade, it has like crazy posability that you wouldn't think it would have. And then the other thing is this monstrosity here.
Oh my god.
I like that reaction. This is
a big boy.
Yeah, this is another big boy. It is the TR1 or no, excuse me, the TR6. I need to go flog myself for getting that wrong. it's the Gundam TR6 Heisenthlay 2 Raw. It's from a side story called Advance of Zeta, where the whole premise of that was like really crazy experimental mobile suits, and you know how like they were developing stuff leading up to Zeta Gundam. This thing is a beast. I have the TR6 Woundwort, which is like the base for this thing. So it's like it's a lot of option parts basically added onto it to make this thing. So that is a kit that I am very much looking forward to. Also, the pose that you see it in right there—that's pretty much the only pose it's gonna stay in.
Oh yeah.
But yeah, I mean, that's been pretty much my my Gunpla talk. Like, again, like I need to stop here because I could keep going.
One thing I want to mention, you turned me on to these, is they're called 30-minute missions.
Yes.
These mini sort of Gunpla kits that cost no more than like $15. I actually found one at Barnes & Noble recently, and you can find them in different colors, and I believe you can combine colors from one kit to the other to kind of mix and match. Yeah. So that would be like a really good introductory.
Oh yeah, definitely. Like those are those are another ones that like you can really go down the rabbit hole on, because they have, like, you know, Bandai's basically taken this method of selling you model kits and parts. So, you know, right. Like you get the base kit, it's really cheap, it's simple to put together, and like it's named 30 minute mission comes from the fact that it should really realistically take you 30 minutes to put it together. But then you can also get like add-on weapons and add-on armor.
Yeah,
and
I've seen some toy companies do that where you sign up for a subscription fee, they send you a part every month, and by the end of the subscription fee, you have a whole thing built. Like, yeah. The Ecto-1 from Ghostbusters, they did that. It's like diecast metal. That's pretty cool. Like a subscription fee box.
Since Jero brought it up, I'll post one that I built recently. So like Jero was saying, you can kind of customize them by like mix and matching parts or from the same, like it's like called the Alto. But like they come in various colors. So like here, the one that I've just uploaded is the red Alto and the dark gray Alto mixed together. It's got the sniper weapon set armor on there, and like a special backpack, and you know, the rifle and the bazooka both come from like different sets. So like you can kind of really go kind of crazy with those things with customizing.
That's cool.
Especially when you have like lots of, you know, plastic model kits lying around like I do.
There's a couple of streamers I've seen that they do live stream where they're painting and building it on stream and showing everybody how they do it. It's pretty cool.
Yeah. So I'm looking forward to you know, getting more into like the painting aspect of the hobby, and there's actually another kit that I bought today, actually. Is the Justice Knight, also from Build Divers. That's a kit that I really like. I like the kit okay, like the mobile suit, but what really appealed to me about it was I want to make it look good, you know, with paint. So like, you know, I bought, like I'm gonna do the metallic gold, some silver. I bought some metallic red. So like that's one where, like, you know, even if you're not a huge fan of the kit itself or the design, you're like, you can customize it, make it look how you want it to look. So yeah, Gunpla is freedom. But unless anybody else wants to mention anything before we say goodbye for the night, anything coming up that you guys are looking forward to?
I think I'm looking forward to the next season of Railgun. Couple weeks till that comes out. I'm so excited. All on my birthday, January 9th, a lot of episodes, a lot of anime being sent out. So yeah, winter season's here in a couple weeks. A month.
Yeah, I was gonna say, do we have any plans for like doing anime of the you know, like anime of the year, game of the year, that kind of stuff coming out now?
Yeah, certainly.
Yeah.
So when we get to the end of the year,
yeah. It'd also be interesting to do decade. Next year.
Yeah. Well, that technically doesn't decade end in 2021 or
technically 2020, but I would say that we've been doing this for 10 years.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Then yeah, we probably should plan something special.
Oh yeah, I'm down for that.
And your anniversary. There will be drinks involved. All right. So for everyone here today, I've been Amuro, and this has been your Anavision podcast.
That is so awkward.
I know.
Yeah.
I've been Amuro. Yeah.
I was Fosh, really, by the way.
I'm not really Amuro.
Good, those voices.
I did think about that. Because you have the name of a character. Yeah. I was wondering if when you watch the Gundam series, the name always mentioned Amuro, like not like you think, oh, they're talking to me, but like your name, like do your ears perk up or something when you hear it?
I mean, not well, a little bit. I mean, like, it's one of those things where like I chose that name because it's like my favorite character. So like, you know, when we were watching the movie last night, I was like, ah, oh, this is, you know, I that's one of those things we should talk about that some point, and how ridiculous that movie is.
There's some anime from your brother watching, and one of the main characters' name's Josh. That's his real name. And like 2 episodes later, he died. I'm like, oh god. Like they killed Josh. Like,
okay. They killed Josh. Like the only character like in anime that like shares my name or like, you know, like that I've seen is actually Jean from Attack on Titan. So I'm not super pleased with that one.
I haven't seen anyone with anyone.
That's a bad draw.
I haven't seen anyone with Daniel or Joey. I haven't seen those yet. Mm. There probably some if I look, but yeah.
It's really
probably more Western media.
Yeah.
Really confusing for my nickname is it's Steve, and that's a real normal name, yet that's not anywhere close to my real name.
Steve's nickname has nothing to do with his real name, and it's just a normal name. But yeah, so for my other gracious host here, I've been Amuro once again. And this has been the Anavision Podcast. We'll see you next time. Launching!